if you have a fear or an aversion to something, to some risk that you're about to take, if you actually sit down and write down, okay, what is realistically the worst that can happen if this all goes wrong? And then what can I do and how long will it take to offset those losses? And many times when you just name very specific and detailed those kinds of things, and then also name the upside that you're trying to get, it really can demystify fear and turn that, you know, giant scary bear into a little mouse. Welcome back to the Making Money Podcast, where we talk about how to make more money, keep more of what you make, and make your money work harder for you. I am your co-host, Benjamin Foss, and before I introduce Paul, I have to say this is not financial advice. Sitting across from me, as always, is the entrepreneur, business owner, and hair specialist, Paul Ng. Paul, how are you today, my friend?
I am doing great. How are you, Ben?
Fantastic. It has been a cold day.
Freezing.
It's been a cold last few days, and it was overcast and very sleepy.
Yes, it's sleep weather, for sure. Cold sleep weather.
Hopefully winter will go away soon so I can break out the muscle shirts. And
I'm going to go with you on that thought. With 3 more months of this, I don't know. Scary.
We will see. But hopefully wherever you are is nice and warm and cozy as we wrap up our 4-part series on questions you should ask to unstuck your business. We have talked about customers. We have talked about suppliers. We have talked about finding your niche market. We have talked about understanding the constraints of your business and a number of other topics. And with this final episode on this series, we want to talk a little bit about 3 specific, distinct questions, kind of a little bit on 3 different topics, but things that we believe will really help to jumpstart you and to help unstuck your business. So as we begin, before we kind of get into this and wrap up, Paul, are there any sort of, as you've thought about like these last few episodes and some of the questions, or have there been any like main points or themes that have really stuck out to you?
You know, I feel that knowing your customer is the biggest point I like in this whole series. And for me, it's because I'm a people person. That's just a given. I like to know all about my customer and what I can do for that customer or how we can work together. It's just my little niche that I have about people and loving people.
Spoken like a true extrovert.
I guess so.
No, I love that. And I think it's one of the reasons why people love working with you is because you have that personalized touch.
Yes.
And people like to feel that personalized touch, especially with in a world with mega corporations and going through phone menus to talk to a live person. Yes. And everything feeling so distant and corporatized and phony and digital or whatever it may be. Having an opportunity to talk and interact with a real person, having that personal touch. I mean, it's a way that you can stand out in your business.
Absolutely. And being a one-on-one gives you the opportunity to get to know. And that's all I always say to my clients. I want to know all about you. I want to get to know you. So you're not just, like you said, that whole corporate level of just a number. Or here, you're going through my automation system and you still can't get me. You know, the nice thing about me is I may not pick up the phone very often, but if you send me a text, more often than not, I will answer that text fairly quick.
You're very responsive. And when you have that personal touch, you follow up, you know, you're meeting with someone to do their taxes, be like, oh, how's the wife? How's the kid? You know, how's Fido? Yeah. whatever the case may be. And people really appreciate that, you know, and that's something that I think can help people overlook a higher fee or it gives you grace if a mistake is made. Like relational equity goes a long way in like so many different aspects of your business. And I think it just helps make life in general a little bit more enjoyable too.
I'm 100% with you on that, Ben.
So moving on to our final 3 questions. The first question we want to ask, and maybe, you know, this could have been even in the first episode because we talked about some more big picture stuff, but one thing that can be helpful for you to ask is you're thinking about your business, the type of business you want to have and the type of life that you want to design for yourself. What is my appetite for risk? And this is an important question because the bigger your business gets, the bigger the swings that you really are going to have to take, the larger the money amounts that you're going to be dealing with, the larger the potential fallouts can be, because you're hiring employees and you're maybe, if you're a brick and mortar, opening another location, franchising, whatever the case may be, with all of the benefits and the glory and the excitement that comes with leveling up your business and growing, there's risk involved. And for people who have a low tolerance for risk, entrepreneurship in general, but especially like aggressive entrepreneurship in particular, might be more than they really want to try to stomach.
Absolutely. You know, the appetite for risk for me is the reality of how many more clients can I take before I can't help or I cannot service. That's the big thing for me personally as a business owner. I like to be so hands-on and so with the client that I think my risk tolerance is, am I willing to take on more before I start passing them on to my associates? And oftentimes people like to know the owner of the business, or they want to be with the person that's actually handling their paperwork or their business. They don't want somebody else to see. They don't want someone else to touch. But at some point, you got to realize as a business owner and as the entrepreneur, you should know where your limits are and be able to say at some point, I'm sorry, I don't have the bandwidth. I'm sorry, I will need to have you work with my colleagues. That's not something to be ashamed about, but that is part of risk. Or you go to the other side, how much money am I willing to risk to make this work? And that's where I'm going to say 90% of the world is. They're afraid of spending the money to get to the next level. The old saying is you have to spend money to make money. Absolutely 100% true. Absolutely 100%. And don't be afraid of it. But know that that's your risk tolerance. Think of it as a slot machine. And I hate to say this, but are you willing to let go of that dollar bill or $10 or whatever it is into that slot machine as a gamble? Because everything in life is a risk. There's nothing guaranteed. The only things guaranteed in life is taxes and death.
There's another side of this equation too, which has to do with spouses.
Yes.
Because there are situations where, and it's typically the male in the equation of like a typical like heterosexual relationship, like the husband is the more like big swing risk taker, and the wife is a little bit more like nervous, or, you know, if there's a down week or a down month in the business, can feel a little bit more afraid of what could happen, of whether, like, are we going to pay the mortgage or whatever the case may be. And so as you are designing your business strategy and business plan, obviously, like, if you have a partner or a spouse, be in conversation with them about the kinds of risks that you want to take. And the reason why we kind of put this in the Unstuck Your Business series is because a lot of entrepreneurs can get stuck sort of dividing their focus between trying to sort of appease the like Wild West entrepreneur side and the more conservative domestic side, and trying to kind of have it all. And in the stress and the anxiety and the push and pull of that, I think a lot of times there's focus that's lacked. There's inconsistency and follow through, because if you're going to take big swings, like, there's got to be consistency in the follow through, or your odds of success go down dramatically.
Absolutely.
And so I think being on the same page with your partner regarding that risk tolerance and how you want to design your business and business strategy is really crucial for having that consistency that you need. Like, listen, if you want to build slow and steady, you can build slow and steady. You can take smaller risks for smaller rewards in many cases and still brick by brick stack up something that can support you and your family for the long haul. But you just need to be realistic about what those risks you are and are not willing to take.
Absolutely. It's all about your conceptualization of, and that's your of, it's not anyone else's, right? You have to put into play and be afraid. It's okay to be afraid. You know, that's why, that's what we're here to do, is to learn, stumble, fall, and get up and learn from that. So when you have a spouse that's a little more nervous or a little more scared, it balances you out, really. I mean, if you look at it, you're the aggressor. This one's a little less aggressive. This one's, you're the assertive one. This is the more timid and shy one. So reluctancy is not a bad thing. But always know where you stand. That's the important thing, too, is that risk tolerance, being able to know where you stand and where you're willing to put that risk and gamble. Knowing that there could be a shortfall. And what does that look like? Like you said, it's paycheck to paycheck at that point, or I'm a little scared. We might not have a good month, right? But once again, it is a appetite for risk.
And there are very specific strategies you can take to mitigate risk as well. Like you can have what I like to call the oh shit fund.
Yes.
It's the oh shit, I lost 3 big clients and I have to take a pay cut for a little while I rebuild this, but you know, it's okay. Like we've got 3 or 6 or even 12 months worth of reserves in our personal accounts or somewhere accessible that we can pull it out. And then the other comment I want to make is risk tolerance can also be elastic to a degree. And if you are working with a partner, and it could even be a business partner, who is more risk averse than you, if there's a big gap in your tolerance for risk, you can take some smaller swings and then walk out and point out the successes and point out that, yeah, okay, this didn't work out, but look, here's how we mitigated the risk. Here's how we handle it. And look, it's no big deal. Like we recovered from it very quickly or whatever the case may be. Because a lot of times, one of my favorite things from the book, The 4-Hour Workweek, which is a very popular book. My favorite part of the whole book, he talked about the naming of fears and how if you have a fear or an aversion to something, to some risk that you're about to take, if you actually sit down and write down, okay, what is realistically the worst that can happen if this all goes wrong? And then what can I do and how long will it take to offset those losses? And many times when you just name very specific and detailed those kinds of things and then also name the upside that you're trying to get, it really can demystify fear and turn that, you know, giant scary bear into a little mouse.
Absolutely. It's being prepared. I think that's the bottom line on that one. In the world of accounting, we tell a lot of clients, make envelopes. And in those envelopes is your budget. So if you're going to go grocery shopping, you're going to put cash in that envelope and you're only going to take that cash to the store. So it lets you know, okay, well, I can't just shop till I drop. I can't do impulsive shopping. So that means proper planning, proper results, right? So it's kind of,
I know the Doritos are on sale, but you're not buying 5 bags.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's kind of the same concept there.
Yeah.
Just knowing that, you know, where, once again, how much am I willing to take on and how much am I willing to lose?
Moving back into more strictly the business space, we want you to ask yourself and your business, am I outsourcing the right tasks? And I saw a video about this and I wish I could credit the lady who shared this thought because it was really great. I'd love to give her credit, but I don't know how to find it again. It's one of those, you're scrolling through Instagram reel and you just, it's gone forever. But you can break down your tasks into A, B, and C tasks. A tasks are the ones that you are best at and are most effective levers in your business. Your points of highest leverage in growing and maintaining the health of your business. B tasks are sort of your next level down, the things that you're pretty good at, but other people might be comparably good at. And then C tasks are things that need to be done, but you're not particularly gifted at either because maybe they're just low skill related things or things that maybe you're just not good at accounting and you know, spreadsheets and Excel and all of that. When you're looking to hire and to outsource, you really want to be trying to outsource those C tasks first. For one, many times those C tasks are actually the cheapest to outsource because they could be low skill. They're low leverage. They're not the things that, you know, are the most essential for growing the business, but they're the grease that keep the wheels turning, right? But a lot of times as entrepreneurs, I think it can be easy for us to want to like hire people whose A tasks are also our A tasks as we feel that similarity and that camaraderie. But when you're looking to hire, I think it's important to ask, like, am I outsourcing the right tasks?
I have that problem. Over the years, I have always been hands-on, 100% myself. I will do it. I will oversee it. I will take the blame. I will make it right. And you get to the point where you have to know your risk tolerance on that one again. Like, do I need a staff? Do I need a right hand? Do I need a personal assistant? What is it that I need? And that certain age and having my business for so many years, it got to that point where I really just needed a right hand. So I got myself at age 40, we'll just go there. I decided I wanted a driver. And that's all they did was drive me around all day long. I said to myself, I need that. And then I decided I need a personal assistant. So my driver was my personal assistant and did all my personal things. And then I realized, okay, I need to grow my business to the next level. So now I need bookkeepers. So I started hiring bookkeepers. And then I realized, wait, I need another me, because if someone can't get something done and they need someone like myself with those particular skills, I need somebody there to do that, right? I can't just have a bookkeeper and a personal assistant. So I hired a person that could handle those type of tasks that don't need me there personally, but someone else can do them. So I started looking at that, and now I've gotten to the point where I have one outsourced out of the country person doing certain things in my business. And that has been such a blessing. I could not even tell you. I was so adverse to doing that for so long. And just last year, I finally broke down and said, I'm going to do this. And that fear and that risk tolerance, as we're talking about consistently, went down. Totally. I mean, I got to that. I'm comfortable. My risk tolerance now is at a comfort level versus I have anxiety. I got to the point
just
where...
just a little exposure. We talked about it. Risk tolerance is elastic.
It is. And so now I feel so comfortable. It was some hand-holding for a minute. And so that's okay because it's a learning curve for all of us. But now it's seamless. I don't even think about it. It's so seamless. And I just have to oversee it maybe about 5 hours a month, which is amazing for me to let go of 40 or 50 hours a month of my time. So don't be afraid. I don't be afraid. Kind of feel the waters out first and see what you need. But don't be afraid of outsourcing.
If you are trying to outsource a task, the purpose behind it in general is to free up your time for more important things. Right. So if you can, I believe John Maxwell has this rule of if someone else can do a task 80% as well as you can, you should not be doing that task. And the whole point of freeing up your time is so that you can focus on those high leverage A tasks that are pivotal for growing your business, whether it be working on marketing or product development or networking with high value clients or business strategy, whatever the case may be. The purpose of outsourcing these things is to empower you as the business owner to be the CEO of your business and to pull those high leverage levers to help you grow.
Absolutely. I was just reading these notes that we had, and you know, a lot of times we just don't want to let go of control. I think that's where it's coming from.
Yeah.
It's, I feel that no one else can do it as good as me, or I don't want someone else to do it because I won't get the glory. I mean, it's really just that kind of whatever that word is I'm looking for. That's that one level versus the other level and fear. So if we can get past that and move forward with, I do have somebody, I really want to have somebody, you got to get to that level of trust, really. And, you know, looking back at some of the trials and tribulations I went through from, you know, growing a business with literally moving to Colorado with 10 clients. And now today, 23 years later, this April, I'm going to be exceeding over 742 as of this morning.
Woo.
742 active clients as of this morning.
That's more than two a day.
It is, absolutely. And I never thought I would have that many clients. Honestly, I thought, you know, 50 would be plenty because I'd be comfortable. And then 100 was comfortable. And then 200. And then at that point, I need help. I can't
do this.
You
have five or six staff, something
yeah.
like that?
Yeah. Yeah, I have 5.5.
Because they have part-time.
I do have part-time. One very part-time person.
Yeah.
And it's very helpful regardless of how part-time it is. You know, it alleviates a lot of stress from me personally. And it actually gives my clients a one day a week for a couple of hours to actually have them come in and see the person who's actually doing some of their work. I'm overseeing it primarily, but there's someone else doing that work, which takes so much off your shoulders. I mean, I can't stress that enough about that outsourcing. And the model that you choose on outsourcing, whether it be a professional that mirrors you, which I don't suggest, I suggest bring on people that is a support staff. And then after you get your support staff, then you find a protege that can be the person that can understudy you, as they call it, so that if something were to happen and if you went to the hospital or and if, you know, the ands are unmeasurable, but you have somebody there that can fill into your shoes until you can get back, right? And that's what I feel is more important. Let go of some of those, I don't know what you want to call it. I mean, it's that ego. I'm just going to go there.
There's pride and there's fear, right? And those are two of the big things. And
yes,
I think the part-time individual is a great point for people who are maybe a little bit smaller and don't need a full-time person. You can do contract labor, hire someone overseas, you know, just depending on the task and whether remote work is possible for that task. There are many options through either part-time work, contract work, overseas work, where you can, at a relatively low cost, kind of dip your toe in that delegation water and start to teach yourself the skill of training, which I think is something we're going to talk about soon on the podcast, about hiring and training people, because it is really a skill set into itself. And maybe for your own comfortability and risk tolerance, as we've talked about, you do need to start just part-time and train someone part-time, and just, you have a smaller wage to pay, you have a smaller time commitment, and it's like, you know, I'm just going to delegate this small thing over here. It's 10 hours a week of work. An extra 10 hours a week is still 2 hours per working day. Like, that's still a lot of time that you can spend doing quality, high leverage things for your business. But it doesn't feel quite as overwhelming or intimidating as trying to bring on a full-time person salary plus healthcare benefits or whatever else that may entail.
100% agreed on that one, Ben.
Finally, I want to shift to you, not just as the person running the business, but you, like, as an individual, and want you to ask yourself, like, who is your role model specifically in business and in your niche? Is there anyone that you know about in your industry that's really just crushing it and doing an amazing job? And what can you learn from them? Whatever niche you happen to be in, whatever business you happen to be in, like, there's probably, like, almost certainly someone in that business that's already crushing it and doing an amazing job, or someone in a similar type of business. And I think finding those, even just digitally or virtually, those mentors, or maybe you could even reach out to them and pay for some time to learn from them and have some coaching. You'd be amazed at the things that you can learn from people who are 5, 10, 20 steps ahead of you, and the things that they will teach you to help, the secrets they might be willing to share with you to help you unstuck your business. Sometimes the solutions that you need are kind of catered to a specific industry or a specific market, and finding someone who could help you within that market could change your life forever.
Absolutely. And you know, role models don't necessarily need to be your superhero. They really can just be someone you look up to that can be a mentor. Or it could be family. in all honesty. You know, I look up to my brother, who's an entrepreneur as well. It kind of runs in our family, actually. And I look at how he started. In short, I'll give you a little background. He was in the Army, came out of the Army, and then worked for the Chinese Yellow Pages in San Francisco. Did that for 2 years, and then decided to go into the insurance business. And so he became a captive agent for Farmers Insurance, meaning that he only sold Farmers. And then he grew from there, and he did other brokering insurance. So he was able to sell for a couple other companies. And then he opened up his own real estate agency, then his own loan for mortgages, his own mortgage company.
Wow.
Then he did some import-export, and then he went into day trading, and he still does all of the above, but more on the retired side. And it's amazing to see from how he grew, clearly one client at a time. So now he has a plethora that his sons can now take over the business. And I look at him as a mentor. But, you know, if we're looking into the world itself, I would say Dale Carnegie is probably one of my mentors. You know, Kiyosaki's great. Tony Robbins is great. They're all wonderful people, right? But I came from the mentality of Dale Carnegie, going to college. And at Brigham Young University, that was one of the books that just caught my eye, and I've just followed him ever since. And, of course, he's most well-known for is How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Fantastic book.
Yeah, and that's what his notoriety is for. He does a lot of speaking engagements. He does a lot of short written stories for a lot of editorials. An amazing person. But that is my world mentor, I would say. And honestly, like I said, it could be anybody, really. I mean, it doesn't have to be somebody famous, but someone that you look up to, that you believe in, that can probably give you some guidance or has already given you guidance, right?
Well, people who are not famous are going to be a little bit easier to reach as
Absolutely.
Well. So you have a higher chance of being able to get access to those people, to talk to them, learn from them, build a relationship. And, you know, back when we had Lena and Olga on a number of months ago, we talked about networking and we talked about leading into those relationships from a perspective of trying to give and have mutual value. And if you can find a way to do that with someone that can teach you as well, they're going to be more inclined to help you if you're also helping them.
Absolutely. And it's always about a win-win situation, as I call it. We always look for what can we get from this, right? Because we're always looking for something. But what can I also provide to get this? A lot of times when I have clients come through, and it doesn't matter what industry it is, it could be any one of them, it could be the accounting practice, it could be the salon, I like to get to know that person. I always keep saying this. I'm a people person, and yes, I am an extrovert. But what can I do to better them, and how can they help me? And usually the best compliment for someone like myself in my industry, the referral is the best compliment I can get.
Referral is a great compliment because it's saying, like, not only did I enjoy your service, but I'm going to put my own reputation on the line with my friends or family to tell them that you need to go here as well.
Absolutely. And it's a win-win there. And you can't please everybody. Now, out of my career of 28 years this year, actually.
Wow.
It's a pretty long time. I probably have had, I would say, 10 people who were disappointed with my service or felt that I didn't provide them what they wanted. But you can't please everybody, right?
That's a pretty low percentage, though.
In general, yeah, absolutely. And there's no wrong rhyme or reason to how it happened. It just sometimes you don't click. And sometimes people's expectations are so grand that they forget that you can only do so much because, and I always say this too, I'm a tool and I'm only as good as what you can provide me. So if you're going to hide something from me, then there's going to be a flaw in what I'm producing for you. And that's basically how my industry works, no matter what it is. It could be in the hair industry. You could lie to me and tell me that you didn't use a boxed dye, but all of a sudden I'm processing your hair and what it looks like is a boxed dye that's coming off of your head before I can even do anything. Or I'm in the accounting world and I'm doing your taxes and you purposely do not tell me about a potential income, and then it comes back and the IRS or the state will say, okay, I'm giving you a letter. It says you didn't report this income. You're now going to be automatically reported by us. So you have a chance to challenge that. So you bring that to me and then you have to tell me, well, and whatever that is, it could be I forgot or I purposely, but it, you can't please everybody, right, Ben? I mean, there's going to be some disgruntled people. Sometimes people
just mess things up. Yeah. It is what it is.
And we're all human. And, when there's a mistake, absolutely, I will take full responsibility on that mistake.
Maybe that's a great episode for later, talking about what do we do when we screw up in our business.
Absolutely. It happens all the time. Okay.
And how do we rectify? And how can we turn angry customers into happy customers?
Absolutely.
Maybe that'll be a future episode. Speaking of episodes, this will be our second ever podcast in video form on YouTube. I don't think we really mentioned it last week because it was the first time and I wanted to make sure actually everything worked. But we have everything working. A few weeks ago, we tried it, and we had this big intro about how we were all excited to be on video form, and then it didn't work. So I was like, okay, we're not going to jinx ourselves again. So no jinxing this time. We are live. We are on YouTube. So if you're used to listening to this in audio form and you want to see our lovely faces on YouTube, for me, I listen to a lot of things on YouTube. So I pay for premium. I don't have to deal with ads. I like YouTube's app and the way it's set up. It just works really well for me. So if you prefer to consume content on YouTube, find us at the Making Money Pod on YouTube. And it has the same logo and everything that you're used to seeing on podcast forums. It should be easy to find. And also, we now have a Facebook page, The Making Money Pod, and we're also on Instagram at Making Money Pod. So just search for The Making Money Pod anywhere on social media, and you will probably find us. We would love to hear from you. Like, subscribe, comment, share with a friend, and we will see you in the next one.